There's a code of silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting to the Matrix on March the 5th, 2008. I always ask newcomers, and there's always newcomers coming in every other day. As the word passes around, and they tune in, and I ask them to look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com, where they can look into many, many previous shows and try and build the big picture, and it truly is a big picture, vastly different from the one that's been indoctrinated into us about reality and all that goes into reality. Also look into alanwattsentinel.eu, where you can download transcripts of some of the talks in the various languages of Europe. Up here in Canada, it's been one of these busy days, in fact, the busy week, because the snow melts onto the road, and then it freezes, then you get a skating rink, and you can't go anywhere for a week, probably. And for those who are waiting for mail going out, just hang on, because I don't know if I'll get out tomorrow. It might be Friday, or it might be the weekend. That's just the way it goes at this time of year. Plus, with the privatization, this public-private partnership deal that all municipalities have, all the local councils have, you find these private corporations now go through the motions of sanding the roads, but judging from what I've seen coming off the sanders, I could shake more salt from a salt shaker and do a better job. They're skimping on them, of course, because everyone's after the big profits now. I've no doubt, too, they'll put down about 5 ton on this road, at least on their list, but in reality, you're lucky if you've got 14 pounds in 2 miles. And that's the way of corruption as the world goes down the tube, with public-private corporations getting to run the show. Something we have to learn to live with and adapt to and make other methods of getting to where we have to be. If they leave things alone, in fact, and don't put anything on the road, I could probably get the skates and skate to the store. Those who are watching the world go round, if that's what it's doing, or going down, depends on how you look at it, will realize, and those who've been really studying this for years will realize that it's not just happening by chance. And some of the big boys come out once in a while too and try to almost speak for you, because they understand, they collect intelligence, which is just what you talk about in the pubs and in the bars and restaurants, and to each other at work. Understand that, and they came out and give you plausible excuses to do with that, but they also give you the spins along with it. Yet, this whole 9/11 deal that's kicked off this new American century project was planned years and years before 9/11 happened, and without 9/11 happening, it could never have happened. In fact, they needed it. They needed this, and it's not just a new American century. Every country pretty well on the planet has gone into it with them, which means it took years to set up in advance. Be back with more after these messages.
Mm-hmm.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt back, and we're cutting through the matrix. As the matrix thickens, and we move into other big areas of it, and that's what's happening, because the big intelligence agencies that are into so many absurd things and happy all down through the edges, that it staggers the mind. Most of them, of course, are covert operations against the public, of their own people. In fact, it's nothing to do with foreign people or foreign countries. During the whole Cold War, there were more people observing people within the so-called Western countries than spying on people without, in every area of your lives. And they used to have special post offices in Britain where certain people's mails would be redirected, and they'd open them and read them, and they put them back in new envelopes with new stamps of all different countries, and then rubber stamp them because they had all the stamps there for all countries, and send it on to the proper address. This went on for years and years, unknown to the public, and now they're simply moving into the next phase of the internet. They've done it, in fact, because they gave us the internet and foresaw all the problems before they gave it to us. After all, it was designed for and by the military-industrial complex. Well, here's their next big make-work project for retiring spooks. And this is what they do for these characters who are semi-retired, or they've got too fat or bad hearts or something, but drinking too much brandy and overeating all the functions they go to. They give them these semi-retirement jobs where they make work projects for them to do. And in this new age of terrorism everywhere, it's limitless. It's utterly limitless. You know, during World War II, Dennis Wheatley, who wrote different novels on black magic and witchcraft, admitted to working with an agency set up by the British government who set up these mediums and so on, sorcerers, trying to find out what Hitler was going to do next. And that's not a new thing with the governments when it comes to war. They did the same thing in days gone by when kings would get their famous astrologers and they say, the Jupiter is in line with whatever, Saturn, or good time to attack France. And that's what they go and do, attack France. So you have the same nonsense all down through the ages as they rely upon anything and everything because they tend to panic, you see. Here they're going into the virtual worlds, which they've set up, by the way. And this is an article from the BBC News on March 3rd, 2008. It says here, the US government has begun a project to develop ways to spot terrorists who are using virtual worlds. It's not good enough that you're communicating to each other and being spied on. Now they're into the virtual worlds where all the kooks go. And I have to admit it's kooks who are going into it, or very young people who don't know any better. But there are adults as well going into these virtual worlds when they create their own little fantasy, all new agers, of course, and live this fantasy life in preparation for the brain chip where they'll actually be in it. And this goes on to say, codenamed Reynard, it aims to recognize normal behavior in online worlds and home in an anomalous activity. So here already now they're going to create whole categories of what's normal. Now these are the characters who give you all these slaughter video games and all the rest of it are giving you the virtual worlds, but they're going to see if you're normal or not as they go into it. It says, it's likely to develop tools and techniques for intelligence officers, and I don't know where they're going to find intelligence in these officers, who are hunting terrorists and terror groups on the net or in virtual worlds. The project was welcomed by experts. Again, those experts are strange characters coming from different wombs, tracking terror groups using the net to organize or carry out attacks. Growing threat. Brief details about Reynard came to light in a report sent to the U.S. Congress by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, which coordinates the work of U.S. intelligence agencies. In that report, which talked about the data mining efforts undertaken by the ODNI, Reynard was described as a seedling effort to study the emerging phenomenon of social, particularly terrorist, dynamics in virtual worlds and large-scale online games and their implications for the intelligence community. Using publicly available data, Raynard researchers will carry out observational studies to establish baseline normative behaviors. Do you realize this will go eventually into the brain chip, and they're already going to decide what's normal and abnormal? And believe you me, if you have some abnormal thought, like thinking for yourself in the world that's coming into existence, they're going to bring you in to rectify you rather quick, or else they're going to eradicate you. Once these normative behaviors are identified, Raynard will then apply the lessons learned to determine the feasibility of automatically detecting suspicious behavior and actions in the virtual world. Now, once he went into suspicious behavior now, maybe you use the occasional phrase from the Quran or a poem, and that'd be enough to get you into suspicious behavior. It's a positive step, said Andrew Cochran, founder and co-chairman of the Counterterrorism Foundation. This is the Make Work project for, it's going to rake in billions. For a number of years, we were behind in chasing jihadist presence on the net and detecting it. What a joke. They set up Al-Qaeda actually was a term the CIA initially used for an intelligence network they set up via computer and communications devices to contact their own agents in the field when the Russians had gone into Afghanistan. And to continue here, that's a very sensible step at the moment, said Rorick Jones, Vice President of Concentric Solutions and former Special Branch Officer, just to feel their way around them and work out what new intelligence collection methods might be required to deal with this threat, because you won't be able to use traditional law enforcement methods. Maybe they'll virtually stun you with a gun. New World, a senior intelligence officer at the ODNI, said Raynard was in its very earliest stages and it would be too soon to see which online worlds it would be studying. He added that any work on it would be purely for research rather than for operational purposes. I think it's highly unlikely terrorists would use things like Second Life or World of Warcraft, as they do not have the necessary security, said Mr. Jones. Terrorists use the internet at the moment. They rely on passwords, protected forums, he added. A BBC documentary, by the way, a few years ago, showed that there were no terrorist organizations in Britain to do with the jihad. But the BBC documentary did say that many young people were being put into or starting to join organizations set up as sting operations by the British Intelligence Service. So I keep telling young people, don't join anything. They'll say all the right things to get you stirred up, but you're being led by the nose. This is old techniques. It says, it was inevitable that terror groups would make greater use of the internet and the possibilities that virtual spaces offered them, said Mr. Jones. There's more a chance of things like jihad worlds coming online in the next 5 years, he thinks. The virtual richness of virtual worlds would make them good places to educate recruits about techniques, said Mr. Jones, maybe in Kung Fu, eh? Attack pattern. We can see emerging in cyberspaces and virtual communities that would be wholly virtual, he said. They would organize and radicalize in virtual. I wonder what they're going to charge the public, by the way, for their virtual SWAT teams that go into these virtual worlds and eradicate the ones that are not behaving normally. What a farce it's becoming, isn't it? An utter farce. Many groups were likely to use the expertise and skills they learned in the virtual worlds to target key net systems. Well, they know that because they gave all the war games to the children 20 years ago to make sure there's a generation of nihilistic barbarians for this particular time in history, because they wanted them in the military and go off and slaughter people abroad and wipe out all animals and people in kill zones and throw puppies over cliffs. That's the system. See, they gave us that. They gave us that with the media too, because the media and entertainment industry works with the security intelligence services, always planning and bringing on a culture to suit the future, which they've planned. And we're surprised when it happens, like, yeah. Ken Silva, Chief Technology Officer for VeriSign, which oversees some of the Net's core address books, says such an attack could be devastating. Devastating. We see a continual growth in the amount of horsepower in attacks that are directed at infrastructure servers, said Mr. Silva. We are seeing a large shift from attacks that are directed at individual websites, he said. the sophistication is getting a little smarter, and they are attacking the infrastructure pieces behind them, which is typically in most production environments many at least invested in. Some of the basic systems of the net, such as the Border Gateway Protocol, which helps data reach its intended destination, were open to attack. This is all bunkum because this is sewn up. An accidental misfiguration of BGP in some routers in Pakistan caused the recent problems with YouTube, which left many people unable to reach the video site. And also when the NSA were rewiring all the underground cables of India and of Pakistan and of the various Middle Eastern countries, about a month ago, the NSA were doing that to make sure they could route all information into their own systems faster immediately. BGP is essentially a relatively unprotected protocol and is seriously vulnerable to disruption, he said. Should that happen again, it would take a very long time to correct that situation. This has to be fought at every level, he said. So here you are, virtual worlds where they're going to do more surveys on everyone operating within them and create normative value scenarios. I'll be back with more after the following messages.
I'm here. Can you hear me, Alan?
Yes, I can.
Okay, yeah, there were some problems with the phone earlier, so I just want to make sure. I was thinking about something yesterday I wanted to talk to you about. About four years ago, I was living in a sort of ghetto neighborhood, and I invited some homeless people to come and live with me because they were struggling. They were sort of friends of mine, and I started to notice that everybody around me was sort of psychopathic. Like they were only interested in what they could get for beer money, cigarette money, and so on. Mm-hmm. And then I started to notice that there was this mark, like a badge of honor in the ghetto. They call it getting over, mm-hmm. where you prove that you're smart by taking advantage of people, taking their generosity for stupidity was considered a badge of honor, that if you were more street smart. So I began to be very frustrated, and because I didn't believe in prisons and jails and law enforcement, I didn't believe in calling the cops, I started to turn to magic and voodoo, thinking that maybe I could, put some fear into them to respect me. And plus they were also bullying and also wanted to fight all the time. And because I thought, I didn't believe in police and jails. I wanted an alternative to the system we have, and I was thinking, an African man told me that in Benin you can leave $100 on the table and no one will steal it because of the fear of the curse,
Mm-hmm.
But then it led me down to this quagmire, and I started to take on psychopathic traits myself.
Yep.
Now of course I see past all that, but I'm wondering what you think of all this, and in a system without police and judges and jails and money, How would you deal with psychopaths at the bottom? How would you take care of people like that? Or how would a community take care of people like that again?
No one's ever, for the actual psychopathic type, and they are all done through society, there's no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
No one's come up with a solution because it's a personality disorder, not an illness.
Mm.
And there's no treatment available for it. It's almost as though part of the brain that gives them human emotion or attachment and bonding is not there.
Mm.
And the ones at the bottom of the level, and it's not all homeless people, obviously.
Right.
But you'll get groups of them that do know each other, and they do recognize each other, the same as the ones at the top.
Mm-hmm.
They recognize the same traits, and they form their own little brotherhoods. You have to be very, very careful. Those that work with people who are homeless can recognize that the normal folk with misfortunes, and they do immediately recognize eventually, because they get used to it, the psychopathic types, the streetwise characters,
mm-hmm.
who can read you like a book so quickly and know your weak spots and know how to manipulate you. So there's no way that they've ever found to come up with it. If these same characters were born in affluent families with money and power and went to the right schools, they'd be up there with the other psychopaths ruling us.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And, you know, like I realize now I see past. I don't believe in magic and voodoo and all that stuff now. I've changed, you know. I also recognize, too, that a lot of them were trained in prison. They had been in prison.
Yeah.
And so I could see why you live out in the country, because, you know, when you live in a psychopathic society and you're around psychopaths all the time, eventually you start to take on those traits.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to...
There's an old saying that you do. You become your opponent. You become your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem with even the people during the Cold War. The agencies that were dealing with the Cold War became ultra-paranoid. They employed many psychopaths.
Mm.
And paranoid people who were classically diagnosed paranoid schizophrenics were employed by the Pentagon to put their theories forward, which were adopted by the Pentagon. And we found that with, I think it was Jonathan Nash, who they made a movie out of called A Beautiful Mind, totally different from reality, of course, the movie version. The man was not a nice person, never was a nice person. He lived in a fantasy world of utter paranoia, where everybody around him was doing their own little game, and he introduced game theory into the Pentagon, and they ran the whole of the U.S. on behaviorism with the idea that everyone simply worked for their own advantage and had no interest in anyone else's safety or betterment. And they used that in society, and you see it all through society today. We became part of the game theory with a psychopathic a culture given to us. Doesn't mean that everyone in it is psychopathic, but we adopted the culture because it was promoted to us.
Yeah, that's why, you know, it's like, I don't think I started out psychopath, and I wasn't interested in magic, but you know, it was just being around it so much and being hurt by it, being
yeah.
bullied by people, I started to get very angry. I started to even hate the masses or hate the working class.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but now I view it more... You know, I'm above. I mean, I view it more from above. You know, from the not above, but I view it more of a sympathy. You know, a lot of them have been trained that way.
Yeah.
I also noticed too that not all homeless people in my community were like that. There were some that were really genuinely trying to survive.
Yeah.
But I also noticed that the psychopathic ones form brotherhoods. Or they form groups, like you
yes,
were saying.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome, Alan.
You take care.
I'm gonna take care.
I'll be back with more after these messages.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Through the Matrix, and we're taking callers, and we have Daniel from California on the line. Are you there, Daniel?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, I noticed that they don't have you on coast no more, Alan. Whatever happened with that?
On the coast?
Yeah, they don't call you back no more. They're scared of you now?
It's coast to coast?
Yes.
Oh. Well, I know that the ratings I got from that show, they said were the best it ever had.
I'm sure.
But... but put it this way, if I was kind to some agendas, I would be back there.
yeah, I'm sure. You know, I noticed that, and I just, you know, it's just because it's such a broad listening
uh-huh.
group that they cover. I just, you know, I had hoped that you would be on there more, especially after that one show, because you did such a fabulous job.
I could have been on every 2 weeks if I went along with some agendas, put it that way.
Wow. Yeah, I have a question about some ancient history. Do you think the Aztecs and the Egyptians and the Phoenicians were connected in some way because of the pyramids?
In fact, there was a U.S. professor who wrote America B.C., who came from Harvard, who put an excellent few books, actually, on that subject. And he did a dig with students that was actually put on CBC Radio, as Canadian Broadcasting Corporation for the government. They did a series on his dig in Algonquin Park, and they dug up the tops of three pyramids, and they did find the living quarters of priests, and they found old ancient Egyptian writing and old, they called it Proto-Iranian writing.
Yeah, no, they even found cocoa or something like that in one of the Egyptian tombs or something.
They found it was a Parisian group surgeons, in fact.
There we go. That
did a documentary. It's out there. You can get it. And they took apart the stomach contents, even though it was mummified and all the rest of it. But cocaine is a pure substance.
There we go.
And they did detect cocaine, which can have come from South America.
That's
but the
right.
Phoenicians too were into. They were taking tin from England and Cornwall for 500 years, and they kept it secret to all their competitors where they were getting this tin, because they mixed it to make bronze with copper.
You know.
And also across Scotland too, there's Phoenician graves and mark stones were found. So these characters were all over the world.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, and it's so funny because there's this. I can see this kind of like they're trying to keep people from looking back at least 10,000 years. Like there's something there that they're not allowed. Like they don't want us to look past 10,000 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's why history began with, in the West, we were given history beginning with Greece, then Rome, and so on.
Yes.
But you go into these prehistoric, or at least megalithic-type structures, even the ones in Peru, and these are incredible works of feats of engineering. And they're all over the world, the same types. Plus the standing stones are all over the world, with the mounds in the middle and the alignment of the stars. So there was obviously a common connection between countries at one time in ancient times. They call it prehistory simply because we are not given the written works on it. Anything is pre-written. We simply are not given anything on it. But Barry Fell is the professor. You should read up Barry Fell's book, America B.C., and the other ones he put out there. They were fantastic works, and he gives all the evidence of what they'd found.
Yeah, because, I mean, even how about the... It seems like, you know, like when during the Roman conquest of Europe, when the Roman Church came and was trying to get rid of the remnants of that old age,
mm-hmm.
When they came over here, the rush seems to me was to get rid of all the shamans over here.
Invasions, it was pre-Christian, there were pre-Christian invasions of Britain. And we do know that they'd rounded up all the druids in main places, and they burned them to death in big longhouses. They burned them to death to eradicate them. Yeah.
Yeah, but didn't they also? Is it true that they took some of their religion and amalgamate, kind of blended it into theirs?
You'll find basically all the ancient world was a form of shamanism, and this is at the call. It's called the perennial religion. It keeps cropping up. It's here today, the same thing.
Yes.
Because it's very appealing to the individual to become a god. That's what's behind all what they call New Age. It's really old age stuff. And through all his meditation techniques, the higher up you go, you're eventually told that you can become a god. And that's the great delusion, which they're full of. And it's very handy for governments to train populations like that, because they're taught to deny the negative, don't look at it, look at the nice things in life, as their countries are slaughtering people across the planet.
I know, it works. Believe me, you know, I talk to people every day, and you can see that their conditioning kind of, you can see it right on their face sometimes, you know?
Yes, you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I better go on to the next caller, though.
Okay. Well, thank you, Alan.
So thanks for calling. Hey, you, Jim from Texas. Are you there, Jim?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep.
I'm glad you started off your show talking about PNAC, or Project for a New American Century,
mm-hmm.
which is nothing but an update of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. This is the modern day, the last stage, more or less, in my opinion, what it is.
The learned elders of Zion is an interesting read. There's no doubt that whoever did write it certainly knew an agenda. And that's what's perplexing about it all. We know, again, that there were high groups. We know, too, that it came out before it came out in Russia, but it was actually circulated in France about 60 years before that. And it was altered again to blame just one group. And of course, we know, too, that in the 1800s, even Blavatsky's group at one point and other groups, Masonic groups, were calling themselves Zion, with its learned elders.
You can go back to Adam Weishaupt.
It's not a specifically Jewish thing at all, really, although Jews can join it, you know. But whoever wrote it certainly did understand, even sports. They said they pushed sports to the extreme at a time when there were no sports arenas anywhere in the West. Now they're everywhere. So they knew those parts would be pushed in. They knew, too, that culture would have to be destroyed. Now, that was not a new theory, because in the 1700s, when all of this stuff first came out in the French Revolution, lots of the big writers, Voltaire and others, talked about the necessity to completely, and Proudhon afterwards and different ones talked about the necessity to totally debase society, that all that was existing is moral, destroy it all step by step until there was no morality whatsoever, or even the memory of what was moral, in order to bring in a new society. And that's really what the same agenda is today.
That was started by Adam Weishaupt in Germany.
It was not started by Weishaupt at all. Weishaupt was only one man in one of the groups whose name popped up because they caught him.
Yeah, but to go back, it was started in ancient Egypt or even before that. It's the same plan, same principle.
Same brotherhoods, but this is how psychopaths, again, will always go in the same direction. You see, the only people truly, and the psychiatrists all agree with this one thing, and every study that's been done on psychopaths are the only people who are truly predictable by their natures. Therefore, they will always repeat the same formulas down through history. When they get in control, they must always repeat the same scenarios.
Yeah, so absolutely. They're like the scorpion and the frog. Why did you sting me in the middle of the river? Because that's what I do, and that's what these people do.
Yeah.
They've been doing it for thousands of years, and they cannot even control it. They don't even understand what they're doing. Okay, they do it because that's what we do. That's what they did in the Boer War in England, which is controlled by this self-same ethnic tribe that we're talking about.
It's not just one ethnic tribe here. What you're looking at is a conglomeration of psychopaths from all the dominant tribes that now belong to one. I mean, Winston Churchill belonged to them just as much as the rest of them.
And Winston Churchill was bailed out by a certain ethnic gentleman in 1936 when he was going bankrupt. And he became an obedient slave to him from there on after.
He was pally with Baruch, but so were FDR and all the rest of them.
Well, yeah, he was with them.
These guys don't serve just the bankers. The psychopaths will interbreed with every group, and that's what
Japanese. Of course they do.
It's not just Jews. I mean, most Jews have no idea what we are talking about. At the top, as I say, you've got primarily just one thing that is recognizable, and that's from all groups, and that's the psychopath who is interbred with the other psychopath. And believe you me, it wouldn't matter what you call them, any term at all, it's a psychopathic nature which will repeat ad nauseum until the public start to participate in their own destinies, rather than sitting back and being entertained, and to stop giving power to people that you're taught to almost worship. But I mean, everybody that they present to you to vote for, you know, people literally, and this is, again, a sad thing with human nature, they grovel in front. People grovel. The poorer they are, the worse it is. They grovel to riches. They grovel and they bow their heads and they feel shame for their poverty.
To riches and power. It all goes back to the old, I don't know actually where it originated from, but the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah,
everybody would argue about, well, is this the most extraordinary finery I've ever seen, or is it just, well, it's better than normal clothes.
I know.
Except
we'll have
that
to go on to the next guy,
said,
which is Jim in Texas. We'll have to keep going through. We've got five lined up here. Okay, right, we'll go to Mo in Oregon. Are you there, Mo?
Mr. Allen?
Yes.
Can you hear me good?
Yeah.
Okay, good. You see,
Be quick.
Sure. You see, there is today my internet company, because we have problems all the time, we call them, they came, and then because we live on the fourth floor, they came and they went on the top of the some places in on the top, and they went and checked everything. So these people are spies. They come to your home. I mean, they look at everything in your home. They check everything. I mean, what the hell? I mean, it looked like to me, I went through an inspection. I mean, it was very, very awful. And, you know, is that happening in Canada too? Same?
It will happen with certain people. If they put you on a list, they will do it, yeah.
And another thing is that Iran, will the sanctions stop the bomb or start the war? Can you please answer that for us?
It's hard to say. I mean, I hear their top man in Iran saying two things. It's like the fork man, the fork tongue with the white man. It's difficult to say what game is going on here, because he's already said he would give credence to the United Nations. And I'm just wondering if the United Nations is getting built up to be the big hero that it was meant to be by all of this fracas. They might bring us to the brink of war, terrorize us all, and then they'll tell us that we can't go on like this, and the UN must take over, and everybody will breathe a sigh of relief. So who knows?
I see. Thank you very much. And as you know, that right now there is a French exercise going on with the Gulf countries, and they have made an artificial island inside near to the Persian Gulf, and they are attacking that island and etc. They brought a lot of, you know, they made an artificial island inside the Persian, near to Persian Gulf, and then they are using that as a target practice. With the French, as of right now, until 5 more days is going on.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mo. Mr. Allen, thank you very much, sir.
Bye now. Now we've got Andrew from Texas. Are you there, Andrew? Hello, Andrew.
Hi, no, it's Andrew in Victoria.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, Alan. So I'm noticing that there may be some shifts going on, that is, you know, plans coming unraveled. And I'm thinking specifically, in the last couple of weeks, apparently a couple of stealth bombers in the U.S. Air Force have gone down. It's the first time that's ever happened.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, the incident with the cruise missiles back in August, the six that, you know, went missing and five were found later. Those all seem to have the hallmarks of sabotage on them. And it's occurring to me that enough people are starting to pay attention and wake up that, you know, some of the plans of the big boys are starting to come apart.
I don't know if it's even real what they tell us, because see, they don't have to tell us anything that's really happening. So when they tell us that they flew a bunch of A-bombs somewhere and by mistake, that just doesn't happen. And they've got so many fail-safes, they can't do that. So I wonder what the real game is. Is it to terrify us that the world is so unsafe? You know, I don't know.
Could be. It could be. As you say, they don't have to tell us anything.
They don't. They don't. Really, to me, the biggest blunders they make, they never tell you.
Yes.
So I'm very suspicious of what they're doing. They do want to terrorize the public from a thousand ways. And this is another way to do it, to make us think, my God, we've got bombs missing now, and it's happening right now. They're still losing them. That just does not happen with all the fail-safes. They don't lose planes or bombs or anything, or even go off in the wrong direction. It doesn't happen.
Well, that's true. That's not possible.
Yeah.
And switching gears slightly, I wanted to mention another book called Cloak of Green by Elaine Dewar.
I've heard of that one, yeah.
Yeah, I've got it on order. Apparently she spends about a fifth of the book taking apart Maurice Strong, who, of course, you know about.
Yeah.
And it's telling that, of course, I went to my local library system, not available. I went to my local university where I have a card, not available. And I think I've managed to find a copy, and hopefully it's on its way. But, again, it shows you. And yet, you know, the university here teaches, you know, environmental sciences and so on, and yet one of... You know, anything that detracts from what they're teaching simply isn't available to these students.
Yes, that's the standard. Well, universities are the main way to shape. I think it was Thatcher said that years ago. She says that we must make sure that the university students get the main indoctrinations because they become the future leaders and they must believe what they're taught.
Right.
So they limit access to any conflicting data so that they'll come through their education truly believing they know it all. And it's all the harder to break through to them then, because they truly do believe they know it all. It works that easily.
Yes.
I'll be
Here's
back.
The music.
I'll be back with more Hang On after these messages. I'm Alan Watt, cutting through the matrix on the last leg of this talk. And is the caller still on the line? No.
Hi, Alan.
Hello, yes. Did you have anything left to add?
No, not really, but certainly, you know, what you're talking about with the universities and essentially dumbing people down. Of course, the problem we run into is that we're also brainwashed to only accept people with certain credentials, and so
that's correct. The experts, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, I'll go and let somebody get on the line, and we'll talk again.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Alan. Bye.
Now we've got Adrian from Washington. Are you there, Adrian?
Hello, Alan.
How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm kicking on. Yep.
All right, that sounds good. Hey, I know we don't have enough time, but I wanted to point the listeners out to a movie that I ran upon on. It's called Return to Red, and it deals with the HAARP technology, and it starts off with a quote from Zbigniew Brzezinski, and it's low budget, and parts of the movie are a bit dramatic, but it's worth looking at. There was times when you described how the HAARP would sound over the shortwave radio. It was like the whoom. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
And they had that exact same noise inside of the movie, so it's definitely something to check out.
What was the name of this movie?
Return to Red.
Return to Red.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is it a recent one or an old one?
It looks old to me, but it's labeled 2007.
Okay.
But it looks like an older movie, but it's definitely worth looking at. The over-exaggerated parts, you know, the effects of what happens to the people, you know, you see people banging their heads against the wall,
yep.
Things like that, the nosebleed and all that. And I understand that's part of Hollywood, but it deals with, you know, ultramagnetic frequencies affecting mental states.
Yes.
So it's definitely worth checking out.
I'll try that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, if you have time, I'd like to contact you after the show for a little bit. I don't want to take up your time. I know you got to get something to eat and everything.
Yeah, you could. You better give me 20 minutes to start the uploads first. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I'll talk to you again.
All right, bye.
Yeah, I know, Adrian. We do a bit of chatting back and forth. And I don't know if we've got time. We'll try. I think we've got, is it Methuen in California?
Hey.
Hello, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a question about You spoke of, or you wrote about troglodytes in your first book.
Yeah.
And you talked about perfect possession the other day. I was just curious how those two are related and how those two interact.
Right. In when the Rome was ruling that area, and you also find Horites mixing supposedly with the northern tribes of Israel in the old Bible. They were albino type people, very ferocious, and then interbred with Manasseh, who became ferocious, red-haired, blue-eyed, and they actually fought against the rest of the tribes of Israel. Long, long story, but we can't really fill it all in on at this time, and the music's coming in for the ending. Maybe we'll go into that in another show. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling. Well, from Hamish and myself up here in Ontario, Canada, where it's rather icy and snowy, it's good night, and may your God or your gods go with you.